Well, good morning everyone and welcome, and you all get a gold star for being here this morning. I know it's been a bit of a trial for a lot of you with the traffic and the roads and the rest of it. Welcome to Essex Church, home of this gathered community known as Kensington Unitarian. Particular welcome to anyone who's here for the first time today. We're really glad to have you with us, and there'll be an opportunity later in the service for you to introduce yourself if you want to. For those who don't know me, my name's Jane Blackhall. I've been a member of this congregation for going on 13 years. I work here as the outreach officer, which means I do a little bit of everything. Our minister, Sarah Tinker, is having I wouldn't call it a day off, she's in a Unitarian conference in Transylvania this morning. So I'll be leading the service instead. You'll have noticed the roads being dug up this morning, which we didn't know about until this morning, so we may have challenges with noise during the service, so let's sing up in the hymns and work with what we've got. Aptly, our opening words are from Tim Haley. Amid all the noise in our lives, we take this moment to sit in silence, to give thanks for another day, to give thanks for all those in our lives who have brought us warmth and love, to give thanks for the gift of life. We know we're on our pilgrimage here, but a brief moment in time. Let us open ourselves here, now, to the process of becoming more whole, of living more fully, of giving and forgiving more freely, of understanding more completely the meaning of our lives here on earth. Let's start by lighting our chalice, the symbol of our worldwide Unitarian and Unitarian Universalist community. I'm going to ask Stephanie to come up and light the flame for us. And when the chalice is lit, we'll join together in saying the words of this responsive reading on your cream sheet. We are people of all ages who enter this space bringing our joys and our concerns. We come together in prayer. We greet each other warmly with our voices and our smiles. We come together in peace. We light the chalice to symbolise our interdependence and our unity. We come together in harmony. We share our growth and our aspirations. We come together in wonder. We share our losses and our disappointments. We come together in sorrow. We share our concern and our compassion. We come together in love. We come to this place bringing our doubts and our faith. We come together as seekers. We sing and pray and listen. We speak and read and dream. We think and ponder and reflect. We laugh and cry and centre. We mourn and celebrate and meditate. We strive for justice and mercy. We come together in worship.
A religion that promises a life without tension, a life without conflict, a life without suffering, is a religion of passivity, a religion of mediocrity, a religion of insignificance. Everything worth doing in the world is a desperate gamble, a game of chance where nothing is certain. What is love? Is it not a wild and sublime speculation that can end in ecstasy or despair? What is courage? Is it not a hazardous risk of fortune that can end in victory or defeat? What is adventure? Is it not a blind leap in the dark that can end in joy or disaster? What is faith? Is it not a prayerful flip of the coin that can end in heaven or hell? If I refuse to play the game, if I refuse to risk myself, if I refuse to throw the dice, I am never really alive. I am then only flesh, baking in the sun on a middling plateau with no view of the valley and no road to the peak.
I don't like yogurt. I haven't liked it for 32 years. I've tried it many times throughout my life. I just can't abide that slightly sour tang. Cream, I can eat. Yogurt is just yuck. I've been staying in a funky B&B this week in glorious Snowdonia. The breakfasts have been amazing. This morning, as I was feeling relaxed and adventurous, I chose a granola and yogurt sundae from the menu. spiral layers of crunchy granola and creamy Greek yogurt, sprinkled with juicy pieces of strawberry and tart blueberries, drizzled with runny honey, and with a golden well of honey at the base. It was delicious. It was the first yogurt I've managed to enjoy in 32 years. Aversion is one of the reactions we all have to dukkha, which is a Buddhist word for suffering. I probably had a bad experience with yogurts when I was little, and I've stayed away from the stuff ever since. You might have an aversion to public speaking, intimacy, conflict, dogs, grapefruit, the colour pink, or receiving things from others. Any of these aversions might be keeping you from enjoying your life or holding you back from success. These aversions seriously limit most of us for a lot of the time in ways we don't even realise until we start to pay them attention. We get sneaky at avoiding the colour pink or conflict. We turn down opportunities. We say no when we'd really like to say yes. And we justify our decisions in roundabout ways. Our lives narrow. So what is the point of change? In a sense, what is the moment in which change can happen? How do we start to shift these deeply ingrained habit patterns, which keep us from enjoying the world in all its glory? My first suggestion is that we shouldn't underestimate the power of these aversions. Go easier on yourself. Feeling generally relaxed and open can help lay the ground for change. If we're already worried about the exam we have next day, now is probably not the time to try yogurt. Being on holiday helped get me into the trying yogurt mood. Taking things at our own pace is essential. If somebody had told me to order the granola, I wouldn't have touched it with a barge pole. If someone else had been feeding me with a spoon, coming towards me with a great pile of yogurt, I would have shut my mouth tight and turned away. It also helped that I was able to keep an open mind this morning as I tucked into my granola sundae. I knew that I'd already tried yogurt many times without success. I thought I'd try again anyway. Finally, it's important to repeat your experience. I haven't been instantly converted into someone who seeks yogurt out, but I will try it again when the opportunity arises. I'll continue working on these aversive tendencies. These principles: give credit to the depth of your feeling, start relaxed, go at your own pace, keep an open mind, and repeat your experience, should help you with your own deep aversive patterns.
In recent months, possibly recent years, I've noticed myself using a certain phrase in conversation again and again. I'll be talking about some opportunity or event that's coming up, and I'll say, I've got a push-pull feeling about it, whatever it is. I notice I always do this little kind of dance that goes with it as well. Another simpler way of putting it might be, I want to, but I don't want to, whatever it is. The sort of things that bring this feeling on for me, well, I'm quite shy, really, so it would be situations that involve human contact, making small talk, meeting new people, having to perform in some way, anything where I'm going to end up embarrassing myself, including leading a service. There are many variations of this feeling, I reckon. I'm sure it will be different for each of us. Maybe you can recall situations where you felt this way in life, things that you felt simultaneously drawn towards to and pushed away from. You want to have this new experience, and yet something inside is holding you back. Sometimes it might be about a big life event, a new relationship, a change of job, a move of house. Sometimes it might be less dramatic, about whether you're going to have yogurt for breakfast or not. So in this sermon, I'm going to focus on that push-pull feeling, thinking about examples of it in our life, wondering if there might be a deeper message in it for us, and what, if anything, we might want to do in response when we feel it. So when I first spoke of this feeling to a friend, he said, "Oh yes, ambivalence." But I usually think of ambivalence of, oh, I can take it or leave it. You know, I'm thinking of something a bit hotter here, a stronger feeling with a bit of tension in it. The feeling towards something you'd love to do, possibly you even long to do, and at the same time you have a feeling of dread. Maybe it's not always that strong. But. So here's something that happens to me quite a lot, and I wonder if it rings bells for any of you. I plan something or make a commitment, more or less enthusiastically, but as the day approaches, I start to feel increasingly uneasy, and the unease may progress to outright dread. If I manage to resist the urge to bail out or just not bother with whatever it is, then when it's over, I'm glad I've done it, because I've broadened my horizons and somehow my sense of self is a little bit bigger than it was before. Sometimes we might be very conscious of the pull or the yes in the situation, drawn towards an experience, and quite unconscious of the push or the no. Here's a recent experience I had. I was feeling quite down, quite lonely. Consciously, I knew I was starved of human contact. But I noticed, to my horror, that whenever friends went to put an arm around me or show affection in some way, I would physically dodge out of the way and swerve. I didn't intend to do this. It's the last thing I consciously would have chosen to do. But I was somehow sabotaging the thing I most wanted, and I didn't know why. Still don't know why. Other times it might be the other way around. We're very conscious of the push or the no, steering well clear and avoiding certain activities. And whatever pull or yes there is well buried, possibly even to us. I guess that's how Fiona Robin felt about yoga after 32 years of avoiding it. And it was quite unexpected even to her that she gave it the chance when the thought popped up. For most of my life, I felt like this about any activities involved to being physically adept in any way. So dancing, sport, drama, any form of performance. I tell myself and anyone who asks, I don't do dancing, sport, performance. But there's always been some well-hidden bit of me that knows in some sense I'm missing out. And so somewhere there's a well-buried yes. So I invite you to focus on an area of your life now where you feel some sort of push or pull. Is there something you'd love to do but you're a bit scared of doing it? Because I reckon this push-pull feeling is something that we need to pay attention to. It may be a sign we've got some work to do. It can help us identify our growing edges. If, like me, you've got a tendency to avoid this sort of tension and discomfort at all costs, then you might be ignoring a cosmic signpost and some great opportunity. On the front of your order of service, there's some pertinent words from Mary-Ann Flanagan, a life coach. She says, growing edges are the places in our life we really want to be and live our life from, but we're too scared to go there. We can stay away from our growing edge because we fear failure or we fear success. Going to our growing edge means breaking through our fears. It's going to places that might be uncomfortable, but then not going there is even more painful. It's showing up to life even when we feel scared, lonely, worried and insecure. Last week after the service, we had one of our Life's Ultimate Questions workshops. A few of you were there. For those of you that haven't been to one of these before, here's what happens. Me and Sarah, the minister, pick a couple of questions from a long list of things that people have suggested. And we don't advertise the questions in advance, so whoever turns up gets to have a go at these tricky ethical, philosophical and theological dilemmas which have sprung on the group, and they have an hour or so to share thoughts on them in a structured way. Well, last week we decided to go for one of the more ultimate questions. What is the purpose of life, if there is one? There were all sorts of answers that came up, as you might imagine. But something that was said by quite a few people is to learn and have experiences, to develop and grow, to live life to the full, to fulfil your potential, all that sort of thing. There were other answers, but that came up again and again. Now, if you feel this way too, that developing, growing and fulfilling your potential are the purpose of life, or at least part of the purpose of life, then I reckon it's a spiritual task that needs lifelong attention. So if, as I heard someone say at a Unitarian event once, you're thinking, I've done all the growing I'm going to do, I mean, there may be enlightened people in the room, in which case please share your wisdom with the rest of us, but I reckon as long as you're living and breathing, there's still a growing edge. So, what should we do when we feel a push and a pull? I'm guessing that quite a few of you might be at least vaguely familiar with the book Feel the Fear and Do It Anyway, a classic of the self-help genre. It's 25 years old, I just realised, written by Susan Jeffers. The whole point of this book is to get people to overcome the fears that are holding them back from fulfilling their potential. If you haven't read it, I really recommend it. I think we've got a copy in the library. I read it about 10 years ago, and it gave me just enough of a push to take a few small but life-changing steps. Susan Jeffers wrote this description of her very first Feel the Fear class for a night school prospectus, and I think she just wrote it off the cuff. She said, "Whenever we take a chance and enter unfamiliar territory or put ourselves into the world in a new way, we experience fear. Very often this fear keeps us from moving ahead with our lives. The trick is to feel the fear and do it anyway." So many of us short-circuit our living by choosing the path that is most comfortable. Together we will explore the barriers that keep us from experiencing life the way we want to live it. In the first chapter, she describes a typical Feel the Fear class, where she invites people to list the things they're scared of, and as you might imagine, it's a long list. First, people come up with life events, large and small. What are they might be changing career, making new friends, public speaking, and I'm sure you could add to that list. But she starts to peel away the layers. What are they actually scared of? Because at a deeper level, there's the feelings and states of mind that might result from whatever these challenges are. Rejection, embarrassment, vulnerability. Finally, she goes on to suggest that the one fear that might underlie all of these fears is the fear that I can't handle it. And her strategy is simply to help people develop a sense of trust that they can handle it, whatever it is. And if you want to know more about the ins and outs of that, read the book, because there's lots of handy practical suggestions in there. Susan Jeffers says, "The richer our lives, the more likely we are to experience the pain of loss. The more we're able to reach out into the world, the greater the likelihood is that we're going to experience failure or rejection. But those who are living rich lives wouldn't change them for a moment. They delight in the opportunity to taste all that life has to offer, the good and the bad. Those who lead rich lives intuitively know the secret of saying yes to the universe. Those who say no usually withdraw from life, choosing symbolically to hide under the covers, to keep themselves from becoming victims, ironically ending up victims of their own fears." And as Fiona Robbins said, "Aversions might be keeping you from enjoying your life or holding you back from success. We turn down opportunities, we say no when we'd really like to say yes, and justify our decisions to ourselves in roundabout ways. Our lives narrow." So let's try reaching out into the world a little bit more, taking a few more risks in the name of growth. Like we heard in the reading from David Rankin earlier, everything worth doing in the world is a gamble, a game of chance where nothing is certain. If I refuse to risk myself, if I refuse to throw the dice, I'm never really alive. I am going to add a small caveat in the interests of health and safety. Some years ago, the comedian Eddie Izzard spoke about an insight he had. Being a transvestite as he is had forced him to face his fears, to go out and be himself in a world that was rather hostile, certainly then. To paraphrase, he said that his experience of facing his fears had been the making of him. It had done him so much good that now, rather than running away, he ran towards things that scared him. However, he went on to add that this didn't include everything that scared him, such as running off towards the edge of a cliff and jumping onto a big spike, for example. So there are limits. We're talking about, and I hope this is clear, we're talking about risks that support your personal growth, don't harm others. Those are the sort of risks we're talking about. Susan Jeffers says that each day you should do something that widens your comfort zone. Call someone you're intimidated to call. Ask for something you want that you've been frightened to ask for before. Take a risk a day, one small or bold stroke that will make you feel good once you've done it. Even if it doesn't work out the way you wanted, at least you've tried. You didn't sit back powerless. So try and notice next time you feel a push and a pull. I want to and I don't want to, and see if it's alerting you to a growing edge that needs your attention. And I invite you to ponder a step you can take, maybe even one you can take today, that will nudge at the edge of your comfort zone and make your life just a little bit bigger. It might be something yogurt-sized or something more substantially life-changing. What would that be for you? I encourage you to identify one small thing and perhaps tell someone about it at coffee time, because you can check in about it at a later date and see how you've got on. And one final thought on our wayside pulpit at the moment is a quote from James Luther Adams. Church is a place where you get to practice what it means to be human. At its best, this church can also be a place of transformation, where we're invited to break through our limitations and we're supported in the lifelong project of fulfilling our potential, the spiritual task of becoming all that we can be. Amen. If you are who you were, and the person next to you is who he or she was, if none of us has changed since the day we came in here, we've failed. The purpose of this community, of any church, temple, zendo, mosque, is to help its people grow. We do this through encounters with the unknown, in ourselves, in one another, in the other, whatever that might be for us, however hard that might be, because these encounters have many gifts to offer. So may you go forth from here this morning, not who you were, but who you could be. So may we all. Amen.